Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talk in Tech podcast, where we talk about technology, gadgets, trends, and other innovative products from the lens of a not-so-serious consumer. Hello, Setu. How are things with you?
I'm good, Amit. How are you?
I'm doing all right as well. Remember we spoke a little bit outside of the podcast one day about, you know, doing a series of episodes on equipment and products that are more utility specific. And then we said maybe we'll, you know, get around and do a little bit of an episode or a series of episodes on this. So I was thinking, why don't we explore that topic today?
Sounds like a good idea.
All right. So let me start off with one of the things that became the bane of almost everyone that I knew when the lockdown started a year back, right? So when the lockdown started and everything started to take its real impact, one of the things that in Indian households we got really affected with was that nobody was allowed to visit in. So, of course, there was nobody who services the house in general, cleans the house. We are very used to that environment and you know it very well, right? So we have maids coming in, we have cooks coming in, and we have cleaning people coming in to do the job, which is pretty normal in India. It runs a parallel economy of its own. Just for somebody who's thinking that we live a luxurious life, that's not it. But the fact is that that got severely impacted. Of course, nobody was coming into our homes or anybody's homes for that matter. And we were doing all the cleaning ourselves. So the floors were getting dusted off and cleaned up and mopped up, which is pretty usual again in Indian households, by us, by me, by my wife. And we were kind of, you know, sharing these chores. And over a period in time, that became almost like, you know, unbearable. Even before some of these lockdown relaxations started to shift, it had become a little bit unbearable, specifically if you have to manage it along with a child and along with your work, which itself has pretty weird hours associated with it. So that was a pretty big use case for something like, you know, an automatic cleaning robot, which is something which is fairly popular, I believe, outside of India. And I kind of had a little bit of a feedback from a few of my friends in US and some of them in India, actually, who had actually bought this, given this kind of scenario that just came in because of the pandemic. And I believe you own one. So what I thought we should start off with is, do you really think it's a good idea to buy a vacuum robot? Do they really work? What do you think they work on? I mean, what kind of specific use cases does somebody really need to have for having something like a vacuum robot in their house? So over to you.
I actually own a bunch of them. Actually, at this point, I've not sold my previous one. So I recently upgraded the one that I had until last year. I am a big advocate for them. I have a vacuum robot and a mopping robot as well. So I started into this sometime in 2018 when we went in and bought one from a company called Neato here. It's basically a San Francisco based company. I don't think they sell internationally. The one that I do know is available in India is from a company called iRobot.
Is correct.
And I went with Neato because they use LiDAR-based navigation as opposed to a camera-based navigation, and I'll talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
But I am a big advocate for them, certainly in the US and possibly in India as well. Obviously, lockdown, as you said, would have been an ideal use case, and all of these companies were some of the companies that actually benefited from the pandemic. In terms of their business, I mean, I wouldn't say that anyone benefited from the pandemic, but from a business standpoint, I think they benefited. And the other use case, according to me, for potentially if I picture myself living in India is, you know, you can schedule these guys to clean your house in the wee hours of the morning. So you know, every household has a member who is a little particular about cleanliness, and You know, I remember my mom being very particular about it, that, you know, the floor has to be dusted and other stuff, and maybe in some cases mopped before we have breakfast in the morning. So, and if every household has that preference, you know, not every cleaning person who visits our houses to clean in India can come to all the houses at the same time, right? Unless they start at like 3 or 4 a.m. Doing their job. So yeah, I mean, for those use cases, certainly. The other use case that I think might be applicable, and which is certainly applicable in US, is your kitchen gets dirtier, right? You cook dinner in the evening, and then your kitchen gets, you know, when you're making flatbreads, rotis, and stuff like that, things fall off on the floor. So it gets a little messy. So it's usually, you know, and then when you walk over it, it gets stuck in your shoes, or and then it spreads all over the house. So the way I look at it is that you can potentially, you know, schedule this thing to vacuum your kitchen in the wee hours or early morning, so that it's ready and clean. At least, you know, it probably won't clean it as good as your cleaning lady, but it would still be better than not cleaning it at all, and, you know, short of covering all the crevices and the corners, I think they do a really good job.
All right, so let me kind of tell you what is my perception. Mm-hmm. And this is perception, of course, because I haven't practically used these. I have heard of stories, like I said, and I'm hearing your side as well. And so what I've heard is that these things, of course, they are fairly efficient, the nature of the work that they do, but still the cleanliness that you, like you yourself said, that you might get from somebody who comes in and cleans your house is obviously at a different level. And then there are areas which are really remote or really hard to reach, mm-hmm. in a house, which this equipment might not be able to service that well. And then one of the things that I actually read somewhere is that it kind of, you know, eats into your wires which are lying around, or if there's some wires lying around on the house and below your television stations or below your laptop desks and so on and mm-hmm. so forth. This could kind of eat into it. And with a kid in the house, there's quite a bit of stuff lying on the floor as well. So I don't know how the equipment actually reacts to things like this. So why don't you give me a rundown of how it works in your case? I think you have a kid who's pretty young as well. So I'm sure your floor isn't always pick and span for somebody to just automatically clean everything without sucking and all of that.
Correct. So all of those are valid concerns, and, you know, there are ways to address it. I mean, I wouldn't say that the robot would be able to intelligently figure out what needs to be done in these scenarios, but depending on the model that you have purchased, and let me tell you what I had, and I'll add this to the show notes as well in today's episode. So I purchased a Neato D7 originally earlier, and they call them the D series because they were shaped like a D. They are better than the circular robots that you might mm-hmm. have seen from iRobot. Yeah. The D shape, and if you visualize it in your head, you would imagine that the D shape lets it go all the way to the corner of every room. So the forward, yeah. So if you imagine a D shaped thing running around your house or vacuuming your house, it can potentially go into the corner. And then right at the corner, they have a mini brush that keeps rotating, which kind of pushes the dirt towards the vacuum opening under the robot, and that's how it cleans the corners and crevices and things like that. Again, as I said, it probably wouldn't do as good a job as your cleaning lady or you yourself would do, but it does a really good job considering you know, the kind of challenges we face when we have the circular shaped robots. Now, so that takes care of the first challenge that you said, right? So it all depends on what model you purchase. If you purchase a D-shaped thing, then it probably would be able to go in all your corners and everywhere. If you purchase a circular shaped robot, then it would have some challenges, but typically they have ways to figure it out. They program their movements around corners in a way that they can be as effective that they can be, and they're constantly improving their algorithms, right? They're constantly improving their routing algorithms and things of that nature. Now, the other challenge that you said about the wires and everything, those are There are two ways to solve it. You know, first is obviously, you know, before you go to bed, you kind of take a glance around your room and your house and make sure that none of the wires are hanging, because that is actually a problem. And sometimes it becomes a serious problem, because I have had instances where my vacuum robot has actually sucked in my iPhone charger, and when you try to take it out, when you try to take out that lightning port from the vacuum opening, you know, mm-hmm. you kind of damage the internals, the port is annihilated, yeah. and things of that nature. So it takes a while to clean that mess. So and you are eventually inevitably going to run into that situation once or twice when you have such a device. But once you go through that cleaning process, let me tell you that you will make sure after that you would never leave any wire hanging. The other solution, the better solution in my opinion, is to get a model which supports zoning and rooms and various other things. So these come in different models, and each model has its own set of features. So some of the obviously a little higher price models these days are supporting, so they would, when you set them up, they would go around your house and kind of map it. So they will basically create a floor map of your house, similar to the one that you probably would have gotten from the builder who built the house, or, you know, the floor plans that we are used to seeing on websites and everywhere else, right? So it would create a floor plan, and then it would also give you the ability to create zones within the floor plans. It would also give you the ability to create something called as a no-go or a restricted zone. So different companies have different terminologies for these. So essentially, you can zoom into the floor plan and draw a shape within your floor plan, where you can say that, you know, I don't want you to go there and clean it. So the use case that you mentioned, like under your TV cabinet or right next to your couch, where you potentially have wires hanging, or you may suspect wires hanging, you just draw a zone around that and say that don't ever go there, and it won't go there. Now, obviously, you know, those areas will never be cleaned, right? But once in a while, you can potentially clean the wires and have it manually, you know, navigate there and clean it. Or obviously, you yourself can clean it. So that's the workaround. So it's not an ideal solution, but it's a workaround. What was the third one? Third one was the
kid one. Sounds really interesting. Yeah, the third one was the kid one. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead?
So the third one is the kid one. So we talked about Legos, and we know all kids are fond of Legos, and those are the worst things for your vacuum robot to kind of suck in. And more than the vacuum robot, I think it's a big concern for you and your kid if you are missing a Lego piece, right? So the way I have handled it is, and I don't know if that's the ideal solution or not, but I've kind of trained my kid that, you know, if you leave your stuff lying around, then the robot will come and eat it up. So, and they are kind of not in a really bad way, but in a disciplined way, they are kind of a little bit afraid of the robot eating their stuff. So once you tell them, right before bedtime, I remind my kid every day that, you know, your stuff is lying around, and remember the robot. And we have names for these robots. So I just use that name and tell her that, you know, that the robot is going to come in the morning and clean it. Do you really want it to eat your stuff? And then without any additional instruction, she would just go ahead and pick her stuff up and keep it somewhere. I mean, she might not keep it in the right place, but she would keep it at an elevated place, like, you know, right next, there is a stool or table or somewhere, coffee table. She would just do it there. So at least that's good enough for me, right? I mean,
yeah, that is really interesting. Actually, that's a very neat and nifty way of handling this situation. Because I do that to my kid as well. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't work 100% of the time. But of course, I don't have this specific use case. I usually tell him that I am going to throw it away if it is
not around. And if you don't follow through, it won't have
any effect. There is no robot. Right? That is true.
The advantage with me was that she saw the robot, you know, getting messed up with some of her stuff once or twice. So that's what created some level of sense of that, you know, thing not happening again. So yeah, so she's a little bit particular.
That makes total sense. That makes total sense. I'm actually very curious because I have seen a lot of these robots usually used for scrubbing and cleaning and dusting stuff. I have never actually, heard of, and maybe I've never investigated enough on the mopping part of it. So how does that work actually?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So I mean, mopping robots were popular, or rather gaining popularity, when I bought the first vacuum robot back in 2018, but we weren't too convinced to buy it, primarily because in the US you do have,
Yeah, nobody mops here. You don't mop that
exactly, yeah, you
often in
don't
the US,
mop
right?
off
Do
that
you?
often. Plus
Yeah.
you also have a lot of carpets. It's fairly recently
True,
that
yeah.
in the houses newly built, that they are getting rid of carpets, and they're realizing that carpets probably aren't the best things to have in your house. So then now, at least, you would say the living room and the dining area, and I mean dining and I believe kitchen, were always usually hardwood or tiles.
Correct.
But nowadays, a lot of people aren't preferring carpet, so every builder is giving an option. So that's why these mopping robots are actually gaining popularity. And I don't know if you have researched enough, but there are robots which would do both. A lot of my friends here have a single robot that would vacuum as well as mop at the same time. So it's a
Awesome.
miniaturized version of what we see at airports or malls, that thing that the guy drives around, that fascinating looking
Right.
device that I have always wanted to use or drive around. So it's a miniaturized version of that. Obviously there are pros and cons of both, but a mapping robot typically would go, you would have to fill the tank regularly, and then what it would do is it would have a pad which is replaceable, and it would go, and you can select the amount of water or the solution, if you're using some sort of a solution that comes out of the spray, and then you can schedule it similar to a vacuum robot, and it would go there and spray, and then run over it so that the mop, which is in contact with the ground, basically mops it. And it makes sure that it uses a series of motions or series of movements that would ensure that there is some sort of a scrubbing behavior, but it isn't too harsh that it would damage your floor. So it's fairly soft, but yeah, it
Okay.
does the job. And obviously, in Indian context, we want our floors to be dusted and mopped, right? So it's always usually
Correct.
that.
Yeah.
Interesting thing is that unless you buy a combined one, you would have to dedicate a space in your house to have these one or two robots, and all of that mapping that I talked about is basically based on that frame of reference. So wherever you place them, that is where their 0, 0, 0, or whatever you might want to call it, right? From where they
Right.
measure everything. And earlier I had the Neato
Interesting.
D7, and Neato unfortunately doesn't make any mops. They make a good set of vacuum robots, but they did not make any mops. So the mop that I bought was from iRobot, and I had to kind of schedule them around each other. So the way I used to kind of daisy chain them was that I estimated, or based on the amount of time it used to take the vacuum to complete vacuuming around my house, I would schedule the mopping a few minutes or maybe 5 or 10 minutes after that, so that they don't bump into each other. Although that would be a fun sight
Okay.
to see, but yeah, I mean, yeah. So, but now recently, as I said, right, I recently upgraded, and I'll talk about the reason why I upgraded briefly. But I upgraded to the iRobot's vacuum cleaner as well. The reason was that I wanted to get one which actually cleans itself. So it's basically oversolving a
Okay.
problem, as usual in these Western countries. But a vacuum robot would clean your space, but then eventually, after a few cleans, you have
You
to
have to
clean
clean
its
it. Yeah.
dustbin. So that became a chore for me. If you don't empty it out regularly, it would just either create a mess. I mean, it would further make your place dirty, or it would just not work. And it's obviously not good for the machinery as well, right? Because the air isn't able to pass through.
True.
So, yeah, it was becoming a chore and I was forgetting it again and again. And then I saw recently that the charging docks that these robots have, they have basically grown into... they have a miniaturized vacuum in them as well. So when once the robot is done vacuuming, it would go back to its charging dock where it basically, when it docks on the dock, it basically aligns itself to the dock's vacuum cleaner, and then the dock would vacuum everything from the dirt bin into a dirt bag in the dock, and that bag can actually hold all the way up to 60 days of dirt in it. So you basically need to empty the bag once in 60 days or once in 3 months. So that's why I kind of upgraded. Now that my vacuum robot and the mopping robot are from the same company, I can basically daisy chain them within the app. So I don't need to work around their schedule or anything like that. I can just say that once the vacuum finishes, just go and mop. So, and they work brilliant.
Makes sense, actually.
I mean, every morning, you know, at around 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., I have the vacuum scheduled. It goes around and cleans my living area, my kitchen and everything. It comes back and gracefully goes on the dock, cleans itself. And then by the time it is done cleaning itself, the mopping one takes over and then it goes and mops the space.
That is actually pretty neat. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, while you are saying this, I'm reminded of Jetsons. If you remember that TV series, that cartoon series from when we were not exactly kids, but Jetsons is, you know, pretty fresh in my mind in terms of how futuristic things can get. Based on needs, which are not really needs, but these are all, you know... created needs over a period in time. But yeah, that sounds brilliant. So that's great, Sethu. So why don't we end this segment with rating this particular piece of equipment? Just from a usability standpoint, what would you rate from a usability standpoint out of 10?
From a usability standpoint, I would rate it somewhere around 8. The reason being, you know, there are still things that these products need to address in terms of, you know, I have experienced that with all of these robots, if you move the dock, you know, or the 000 position, as I mentioned, by more than a few inches, they just, you know, don't.
Yeah, they go crazy.
They said that, you know, they're not in the same space and what did you do to me and blah, blah, blah. so that's very inconvenient. And you know, in your house, you always want to move stuff around. So, yeah, I would give it an 8 there.
Yeah. How about value for money? How much would you rate it?
Value for money. I can only speak for myself. And for me, I would say it's around 7. But for other people, it might be lesser, depending on how open you are to cleaning yourself, because it all is a personal choice, right? I mean, a lot of people would say that I would prefer to clean it myself, and there's nothing wrong in that. In fact, that's probably a better habit. It gives you some exercise, and you would clean it way better than anything else. But yeah, I would give it a 7.
Awesome. All right. And I think you mentioned that you will put in the link of what you are using in the show notes as well. So our listeners can actually go and explore if they want to from there on. All right, cool. That was super interesting. And that, you know what these things, what these conversations, you know, they just kind of spring a thought in my mind that I need to get something like this and experiment it truly for myself as well. It's a very unfortunate thought, but yeah, that is exactly what's happening in my mind right now. All right, so let's move on to another interesting lockdown or not really lockdown related use case, but I believe that it has kind of, it has become more and more apparent in households during lockdown, and that is the availability of Wi-Fi as such, right? So in the good old times, like a year back before pandemic, we were all using our... Wi-Fi at home, less for work purposes, more for, say, consuming content or entertainment purposes and so on and so forth. So, and most likely, families were probably using a lot of this time together, or even if they were doing it independently, they were not doing it over an extended period of time. So, and given the way bandwidth has increased, everything was working out fine. But what I have noticed recently is that everyone's working at home, right? So husband is working, the wife is working, you have important meetings to hold, you're just shutting down your doors, you're closing the door to your room, the wife is closing the door to their rooms, and your router sits somewhere centrally or in a corner in your house, and it has to support all of these devices going around. Your kid might be taking an online class at the same time, or they may be actually watching a movie while you guys are working, and the range doesn't work very well. So in my case, I have seen calls drop. I have seen network issues happening when I'm doing Zoom or Teams at any given point in time, because I am in a particular corner in my house, right? And my router sits somewhere really far away from me for specific reasons. And so what I did is that I tried a range extender, right? Which was the next natural choice for me, was to try a range extender, and it didn't work. It just seemed like it was, underperforming even more than my normal router would. It was just very disappointing in general. And then I hit upon this mesh routers thing, which is something I'm actively exploring, and that is what we were speaking about. And you told me that you use them, so I have kind of done some bit of research on my own. But since you have used them, why don't you sort of, explain what these mesh routers are all about, mesh Wi-Fi routers are all about, and how do they really work? And let's take the conversation in the same line as we did
Sure.
last week.
So, and all of these routers, specifically the mesh routers, they are basically evolution of the wireless network connectivity arena that we have in our houses or in our offices or various other buildings. And you rightly said that, the evolution is basically driven by the challenges that we have faced in the past. So mesh routers specifically, without going into much technical details, first, because I'm not an expert in network topology anyways, and second, I haven't looked at the technical aspects of things that much, honestly. But essentially, it creates a mesh topology, I believe, which has something to do with the way it routes traffic, and I'll come to that in a bit. But essentially, it lets you connect different endpoints of a router. So a router is, think of it as a distributed router, right? So you would certainly plug your internet connection from your modem or your optical fiber or whatever you have to one of the access points. And depending on the brand or the kind of mesh router you have purchased, the additional access points or mesh points, as they call them in the mesh router world, may or may not be exactly the same as the center point or the main point to which you have connected your internet connection to. So, for example, maybe it's better explained with an example. Google's mesh routers, when you buy a two pack or a three pack, they're exactly the same. So you would essentially get three units of the same router, and any one of them can be your main router, and the others can be your satellite or your mesh points. As opposed to, there are some companies like Eero or I believe TP-Link and brands like that, which make a dedicated, main router, and then the other extensions are kind of like extensions. They cannot serve as the main routers, right? So both of them have their own pros and cons. I personally use the Google's mesh Wi-Fi router, and for me, I have the flexibility of moving my internet connection point. Sometimes we move it from one place to another. So if I have another router there, I can convert that to a main one, and convert the other two to the satellite ones. The other option is that, if one goes bad, you can potentially, without disrupting, if your center one or the main one goes bad, you can potentially use the other ones which are available. But again, these things, I don't think they go bad that soon. So it's just basically a preference, I would say, based on your specific use case and obviously your budget. So the biggest advantage that you get with these is extended coverage. So they have really strong coverage. The reason behind that is even if you buy a single mesh router, right, it would be far superior to your regular router because they use wireless technologies that are not being used in our traditional router. Some of them being, and maybe I'm using the wrong terminology, I don't know, but if you Google them, then you would find the right word. But one of them, which is pretty important, is something called as beamforming, which we have seen in some traditional routers like the Apple AirPort Extreme, which they have discontinued.
That is right.
Right. Yeah. Or the Asus ones, the really high-end Asus ones. So what that does is that it figures out which area of the house is kind of demanding a lot of wireless bandwidth. And it basically creates a virtual beam of signals focused towards that area. So, but that would mean that, you know, the other areas might get a little less strength of signal, but that certainly helps you with your traffic. The other advantage that the mesh routers have over traditional routers is with the way they route the traffic. So, and let me take an example. So, let's say you are watching a movie, or you are, if you have Alexa or Google Home within your house, you're trying to, you know, turn on a light or, you know, stream something from your phone to your TV, right? These days we have all these either AirPlay or some of the other technology to kind of beam content from our phones to our TV and things of that nature. Or you're just within your home, you may have a media server, you may have some sort of data transfer protocol requirement within your house that requires you to transfer data within the devices in your house. So traditionally, if you go with old style routers, what they typically do is if your main router is somewhere else, right, maybe at the corner of the house, and then if your TV and your phone are in the living room, they are connected to the main router via your extender, right? So even if you are playing a content from your phone to your TV, it would still be routed through your main router. So extenders are basically just extending the signal. They're not doing anything to the traffic. So the mesh routers are basically really good at routing the wireless signal in terms of when your phone is talking to your Apple TV or your, you know, TV or whatever, then the mesh router will figure out, okay, the phone is connected to this access point and the TV is also connected to this access point. I don't need to bother the main router and I don't need to choke up the whole house's bandwidth with this data signal just because I know that both of these are connected to the same access point, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what the mesh network is all about. Think of it as a mesh of lines, you know, going around these three or four or two or however many you have. And then it figures out the best route every time for any sort of signal. So it might not be applicable to a lot of people, right? Because if you have limited number of wireless devices in your house, it probably won't make a lot of difference other than giving you better coverage. But if you have these kind of use cases where you have streaming devices, you have a media server, or more importantly, if you have a lot of IoT devices, right? So all of these smart switches, smart plugs, Alexa, Google, because they work on the local network topology these days. So you ask Alexa to turn on a light, it doesn't need to go all the way to your main router and then come back if they both are in the same room. Right?
That's very interesting, actually. Mm. That is very interesting. And I don't suppose that a lot of houses will have configurations with a lot of smart devices, although I can easily guess that difference between, say, a house in India versus a house in US where things like temperature control and stuff like that. Usually, I have also seen a few of my friends and relatives who live over there they control it using voice control devices like Alexa and Google Home. So I would assume that, there's a greater use case out there, but just give me a quick rundown of how has your experience been versus the kind of content you use and the device that you're using. You said you use the Google Mesh router as well, and then let's get down on the usability and value for money for that as well.
Okay, so my experience has been really good, and the reason I say it's really good because I compare my Google Mesh router with an Apple AirPort Extreme that I used to have earlier, and Apple AirPort Extreme was also renowned for its exemplary,
Yeah, pretty awesome device. Yeah.
Wi-Fi performance. So, I mean, coming from that, I could see a pretty noticeable difference between the kind of, strength of coverage that I got in every corner of my room. The Google Mesh Wi-Fi router, even though it was like less than half the size of the Apple AirPort Extreme, it still gave me way more better coverage than the Apple AirPort Extreme was. So there is certainly advantages. The other thing is that you can start with a single one, right? And then depending on your use case, you can expand into a 2-unit or a 3-unit one, right? So
And when you say a single one, Setu, do you mean the main part of it, which gets hooked onto your actual modem or router?
correct.
You're saying that, oh, okay, that is actually very interesting, because when I was doing my research, I was the price kind of, starts to go on the higher side as the devices keep loading on top of it. So a pack of three is more costly than a pack of one, and then a pack of five is obviously costlier than a pack of three. And I was kind of, a little bit scared of that. And I was wondering whether a single device will actually work. But that is really good that you've kind of mentioned that it does.
Yes. So and from my experience in India, the houses are fairly flat there. So they're not
Correct.
multi-story typically, at least in urban areas in India. So over there, it's a good use case. Potentially speaking, in my experience, I would have been okay with just having either a single one if my modem is somewhere in the middle of the house, or if it's at one corner of the house, and I would potentially have two of them. Right. So and the best part is you can start with just one and then get the other one later. So start with one, connect it to your modem, see how the coverage is. If it's still choppy in areas around your house, you can play around with the placement a
Can
little
you
bit.
add one top of
Yeah.
it?
And then
Yeah.
if it's still not good, then you can buy another one.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, that actually clears quite a few things in my head as well. And I'm sure the listeners would also have benefited whoever is going through similar circumstances. So let's get down to rating. And we are not rating a product, we are rating usability, we are rating value for money of devices like this. Of course, just before we do that, even for the vacuum cleaning devices that we spoke of earlier, we are just talking about devices in general. We're not talking about products, so it's not a rating of the products as such. So, Setu, over to you. How about usability?
I would give mesh routers a usability of 10 on 10. The reason I do that is because they are way, 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 way more simpler to set up and use. I mean, they all come up with a app that you can load on your phone, and it's so simple to set up that coming from the traditional router world, when you set it up, you would actually start doubting, did I follow the entire set of steps or did I miss anything? And it's one of those, oh snap moments when you see, oh my God, this thing is already working, right? So, and then even maintaining them, right? I mean, with traditional routers, I remember restarting them every once in a while.
Absolutely.
I have never restarted my Google Mesh Wi-Fi router. Maybe once in 2 years to do something. I don't recall the last time I restarted it.
Well, that problem gets auto solved in India with power cuts. So,
I mean, yeah, that's a good point.
all right. So, 10 on 10 on usability. That is fantastic. How about value for money?
So from a value for money standpoint, for me, I think I would give it somewhere around 7.5, because honestly, I could have solved my problem with either the same or maybe slightly less amount of money using traditional routers. And again, it's my personal perspective because I like playing around with gadgets and configuring them and messing with them. But for another user, and if you're fond of just having bringing things over and
Plug
just
and play
plugging
stuff.
stuff and making them up, then yeah, it might be a higher value for money for others.
That is interesting. That is interesting. All right. I think that is super good. And I think that is what we had planned for today. These are the conversations that we had planned for today. Now, what would be really good is listeners listening in, if you could, write back to us or just let us know if these are the kind of things that you want to hear more often, because then we can look at more products of this nature, which have been helpful to us and may be helpful to you as well. Other than that, I think we are at the close of the show. Thanks very much, Setu, and have a good
Yep,
day.
thank you. Bye-bye, Amit. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Talk and Tech podcast hosted by Amit Tripathi and me, Setu Garg. We would love to hear your comments and suggestions. Amit's Twitter handle is at unusualrant and mine is at Setu Garg. Music for the podcast is produced by Nomadic Lust. Cover art design is by Malvika Tiwari. You can find the link to the artist's pages and our Twitter handles in the episode's show notes. Until next time, take care and goodbye.